Hi, everyone. Wow, it's been a long time since we did a webinar. I think since Ayala Chaked already a few months ago. I am Eve Harrow, the Director of Tourism and Education for One Israel Fund. And I hope wherever you are all well. A little strange here in Israel. The word hazui keeps coming up, which means like surreal. Purim was more subdued than usual, but we're trying to find that balance between moving on, having normal lives as much as we possibly can, and also, you know, still understanding that we're in the middle of a war and we have a lot to do. In the meanwhile, I'm so delighted to host tonight Tira L. Cohen, whom I met when she was probably still a teenager. I think you were still 19, but already on this incredible path, starting with a few other women friends during their national service, an organization called KEDMA. And just to give you an example of how highly I think of her, even before she was in the Forbes list of people to watch under 30, in February, I organized and guided For One Israel Fund, a women's mission to women in Judea and Samaria. There are a lot of awesome women in Yudan Shomron, and she was right there on the list. And we had a wonderful meeting with her, and hence the webinar was born to just give you a little bit of a background because she's kind of ahead of the curve. She's got Kedma, daughter of French Olim, and they now have 96 communities in this program. We're going to talk about that within for the next few minutes. But I just have to, because I'm so proud of her. She is a PhD researcher at Ben-Gurion University in the Negev, has an MA in public policy, the public policy program at Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and her bachelor's degree is in arts and humanities from Tel Aviv University. So it's only fair. She's gone all around the country to get her education. She's also married. She found time to get married and have two wonderful children, which is a nice beginning, I have to say. So thank you so much for joining us here at One Israel Fund. We have been very, very busy in the last few months doing what we can in Yehuda Shomron, all kinds of different projects, a lot of security, but also we're getting community back on its feet, including, we hope, to add KEDMA to the organizations that are so deserving of support. So TRL, thank you so much for joining me here. And your kids are asleep, huh? That's what we were waiting for? We'll find out. We'll find out in a few minutes. In any event, October 7th, in addition to communities that you have, what we call the border communities, if you've explained how the government designates what's considered a border community, including in Yehuda Shomron, tell us about the communities that you have had in Otef Aza, in the Western Negev, and a little bit about your whole idea of what KEDMA does.
Okay, sure. So first of all, I'm very happy to be here, and it warms our heart in how you've said this hazui situation, this unusual and chaotic situation that we've been in the last 6 months. It's very moving to see all the support from all the world and to feel how we are one big Jewish nation that stands by each other in these difficult times. So about KEDMA, we started KEDMA, as you've said, a group of 13 young women. We all live in communities on Israel's borders. A bit of background, the Israeli government listed 300 communities called national priority communities. These are very small communities that live along Israel's borders in threatened communities. The biggest communities would be 400 families, and the smallest one would be 30 families. And those communities live in strategic area for the state of Israel, all along Israel's borders. So it can be Judea and Samaria, Jordan Valley. Of course, that's the area that KEDMA started in, very threatened communities and a very strategic area for the state of Israel and its future.
That's where I met you, in Maale Efraim, which is just a little bit up the hills from the Jordan
Valley. Right, just a little bit up the hills going from Jordan Valley to Samaria, a beautiful area. It's very green right now, but it won't be. In 1 month, everything becomes yellow again.
Yes.
Israeli spring. So, and of course, the Lebanon and the Syrian border, the northern border, the southern border, which is the border with Gaza, the border with Egypt, and our eastern border, which is the Jordanian border. Each one of those communities is listed. There's a few how bad the security situation is, and how much the geographics is tough, how much far is it from cities. And of course, what we can see that the communities, their strength is a lot of time measured by how the sense of community, how the education, how the culture, how strong the ties are inside the community and outside of it. So our goal in KEDMA is to strengthen the community resilience in border areas. We bring together groups of young adults from 18 to 35. We have different models, and it can be gap year members before IDF. It can be during IDF. We have Nahal groups. It can be after a discharged soldiers group and student villages and young families. And all of those groups, we build them through ideological young adults, many, many good Israelis that have this very strong Jewish spirit that brought us to this webinar today all together. So it's the same spirit, and they come when we give them the right opportunity. And so today we work in 96 border communities, as Eve mentioned, with over 2,000 young adults. And we help harvest more than 250 farms all along Israel's borders, and touch over 25,000 border communities members every year. So coming down to the 7th of October, for me, a very, of course, as for all of us, a very traumatic day. It started nursing my baby girl at 6:30 and hearing the bombs. Hey, I live in Batayin and Gush Etzion, and we're right up from the Gaza Strip. So we hear it very strongly. And I could see that it was unusual bombs, unusual booms. So I woke my husband, which is a commander in tank units in the IDF. And he immediately took his car. Of course, it was Simchat Torah. We usually don't drive, but this was a different situation, we could tell. And he just left for the northern border where his tanks is. He still serves there since then. On my end, from 6:45, I got telephone calls, horrific telephone calls from our KEDMA students in the Gaza envelope. We have
Which
three
communities?
Villages.
Which communities?
Three villages that are on the border. So the more threatened is Nir Oz. The second one is Sufa, and a little, they are really on the border, like 2 kilometers from Gaza. And our third community is Shuva, which is 4 kilometers from Gaza. And of course, the distance from the border is very significant. What happened in Nir Oz is very, very bad. There's a road. It's even a very a good road. Just go with your car for 10 minutes and you get from Gaza to Nir Oz community. Nir Oz community had 400 members of it. 25% of them, over 100 were or taken hostage or murdered that day. It's we have other communities that we saw massacre in those levels, but they were bigger communities. The percentage, it's the worst percentage we got in the Gaza envelope communities on that day. There still
isn't
are.
Bibas, the family, everyone knows, right. The beautiful redhead little boys.
Yes.
Right. So, and right, their parents.
Shirley Bibas, right. And her two kids and her husband are all still hostage in Gaza. And unfortunately, the last kids they didn't come back. Mm-hmm. And there are 37 of them, young women, young men, older men and women, and those kids, the Bibas, beautiful redheaded kids that were taken hostage and are still there. And if we can dedicate our webinar today is for them coming back, hopefully with a big win of the Israeli army, mm-hmm. and for them to come back
healthy in body and in mind. Yes.
Absolutely. We pray about them every day. So the Nir Oz community suffered very, very, very much. I'll just give a few horrific examples, and I'm sorry for how hard the content is, but that's reality, unfortunately. Tamar Kedem, Siman Tov, a beautiful young woman in her early 30s, that she was our first employee in Kedma in the Gaza envelope. She brought up the first month of the student village in Iroz. She was doing the hard work. Unfortunately, on the 7th of October, her husband, and her three kids, all under 6 years old, got murdered, and also her mother-in-law. So it all happened there. We lost many, many, many of our friends, and of course, the others we are worried about. We had two students that had host students in our student village that day that were also murdered. And our student village, which of course is the least of our problems, got burned down by Hamas. And the students who survived this massacre, of course, are in a very traumatic, were in a very traumatic situation and are still recovering from it. But part of the recovery, and this is something interesting to bring a spot to, they made a deep decision that day. For me, being on phone all day and not knowing what, the IDF only came to Niroz at 3:30, 2 hours
after Hamas village. Had already left.
Right. It was.
It wasn't even a battle there.
Right. Unfortunately, and to our village, they only came at 5:30. So all those very, very long hours, we had a few students that we thought were dead or taken hostage. We didn't know. We lost touch with them. And those very, very helpless hours were very, very horrific. The next day, the 8th of October, you still couldn't drive in the 232 road because there were still terrorists moving freely and the IDF trying to beat them. And only on the 9th, the bus of the communities, the members that survived, came down to Eilat, to the hotel as a temporary resident. And our students made a very deep decision, very intuitively, that very much marked Kedma's way in this war situation, which was to go on the bus and go with the communities to Eilat. Meaning they could have gone home to their parents.
Right. They don't live in these aren't their own communities. They're there for a year or two to help out. To me, that is such a statement of the organization that you have built, that they're not just there, you know, for a year, pick some things, get to know some of the people, that they really integrated into these communities to the point where the people, the indigenous people, if you will, of these towns, were taken to temporary homes because their own community was destroyed. They went with them. That is, in the Hebrew, the expression is not muvan me'alav. That's not like to be taken for granted that they would do that. And to me, it really speaks of, also, I would say, the background checks that you do, that when you send people to different communities, you got it right. You know who needs to be where and where they can help the most and also benefit the most. And so it's not just placing people, you know, getting an application and sending someone somewhere, but it really shows how much caring you put into this, how much thought you put into this, and how successful the program is. The fact that even with this horror happening, they feel like these are their people and they want to be with them in the most, and when they themselves are traumatized, as you just said. Do you understand what you've done here on that level?
We see this as a moment for all of us to as a test. Like, we would never have chosen it, of course, but it's a moment that, as an organization, we worked for the last decade from 2014 after the Tsuk Eitan war. Right now, it doesn't really look like a war, right? Comparing,
yeah.
But anyway, after that operation, it made us all understand that something needs to be done in those communities. And now we're 10 years later, and we understand that now was our real mission. This is why we created the organization. And regular days, the students have a volunteer framework and they have Bet Midrash, and we have do a lot of things in order to, for them to bring also their actions and bring also their abilities to the community and also get back, of course, a beautiful place with beautiful nature and to live in a community which is also religious and secular, all kinds of Jewish Israeli young adults. And I think it was a very deep moment of understanding. And I have to say that the community moved from Eilat to Kiryat Gat early in January, in mid-January, about 2.5 months ago. And the students moved with them to Kiryat Gat. And that's where that our action item is: wherever they go, we go. And that's what we have done with all of our border communities that were evacuated in this war. So, of course, I was talking about Sufa members. So they only lost 3 members of the kibbutz. They had a heroic fighting there with many, many terrorists. And they succeeded in some ways. Of course, a very tough event also. And that our village there, which is Discharge Soldiers Village, they moved to Eilat, and then they moved to Ramat Gan and Ofakim with the community. Also, the Shuva community, which is a little further, was evacuated to Almog, which we have another student village in the north of the Dead Sea in Jordan Valley, which was a very good coincidence for us because we were able to aid 350 members of the community with food and with whatever was needed there for a few months. And now the Shuva community and also our group has come back to Shuva. So we can see that the Gaza envelope communities are having some solutions. They moved from what we call phase one, the hotel, traumatic, very unhealthy situation.
Refugees, like immediate refugees.
To those that were very close to the border, the 0 to 2 kilometers moved to temporary housing for the next, it can be 6 months and it can be 3 years. Niroz community, most of the houses were burned down. So it will take a few years to come back there. And but then there is, and of course there's communities like Shuva that already are coming back, stage three, coming back home.
So which, I had the opportunity to meet some of the Shuva people in a mission that one of Zofan did in December. We went down to Almog and we treated them to dinner, the people on the mission, and we had a chance to, we brought them toys and we really had a chance to talk to them and hear from them. And thankfully they didn't have deaths in their community. There was a, and I want to say this also about Sahel, about the army. It's not that the army wasn't trying to get to all of them, but they were fighting on the roads and many of them weren't, had to come from other places. And as the months go on and the stories come out, so, you know, we're hearing a different side perhaps than we heard initially. But there was a tremendous amount of bravery that day. Most of the stories we will probably never hear because a lot of the people, the stories died with them, the things that they did, just running to help in any way that we could. It was a total nightmare. It doesn't even begin to describe it. But the Shuva people were, they were very much, but very cohesive. You bring up the word community, and I think it's an important thing to understand also because I remember from, and it was very different, but also tragic, the expulsion from Gush Katif and the people in 2005 who were taken out of their homes. And the ones that really did the best were the ones who stayed together as a community, who were able to find that strength within their neighbors. Someone has a bad day, another one picks them up. So I think you've really hit on that to a great degree.
I think it's very, think about a community that what brought her together was this hill or this piece of land. That's what makes them, right? That's their shared value. And then they just, they have the ground taken under their feet. It's like literally a very, very tough situation for the community. And their reaction during the evacuated period is very, very significant to what will be afterwards. Just a quick word about the border of the northern border, the Lebanon border. We have six Kedma communities there that are right on the border. Metula, Misgavam, Kfar Yuval, Shtula, Adamit. Those communities are right on the border with Lebanon. Also, even let's say Metula, it's more in Lebanon than in Israel.
Right.
It's surrounded by Lebanon in three sides of it.
And they overlook Metula. They're higher. The Hezbollah looks down into Metula. Yes.
That's true. That's true. Very. There we have a complex border because it's hills. It's very interesting border.
Have those communities been taken out? Have your students been taken out of those places?
Yes, of course. On the 8th of October, we got the IDF asked us to leave. And we got this order and everyone left. The whole communities left, even the older people that are usually not they don't go. But what we got, the impression we got on the 7th of October, what happened in the Gaza envelope, really scared everyone. And no one wanted to try. The thought was on those first weeks that the Lebanon war that will come will be very, very, would be a lot worse even than what happened in the Gaza envelope.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone evacuated. This is not something they usually do. Usually the northern border stays. In all the wars, in the first war of Lebanon, the second war of Lebanon, they were always there during the wars. And this was a different situation. Everyone was evacuated. And still now, they're stuck in phase one. They're in the hotel situation.
Yeah.
So the communities are falling apart because 6 months in and with no vision, we don't know when they will come back. They are going away from the hotels. How much can a family live in a hotel?
Yes.
And of course, we don't know what will happen there. And let's say it's a very worrying situation. Many of those communities are also ruined. The war is on in the communities.
I think every house in Metula has been hit. And today, a Druze young man, a 25-year-old, was killed in Kiryat Shmona. The war is much more intense on the northern border in Israel right now than on the southern border. Within Gaza, our soldiers are incredible, but there aren't so many rockets around Gaza right now. But in the north, it's only getting worse. Yes, many, many every day. So they're just kind of up in the air, your people there?
So we created alternative villages wherever they are. So in Tveria, in Nazrat Elit, in Nof HaGalil, it's called now, in Tel Aviv. So we created alternative villages, but it is a very challenging situation, which is just getting worse and worse for those communities.
Mm-hmm.
I must say another word also about the communities in Judea and Samaria and Jordan Valley.
Please.
And that those communities, first of all, the security situation is very tense since the 7th of October. I have to thank Mark Provisor because as a woman that was left with two little kids, 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, in those very horrific days after the 7th of October, our anxiety was that our neighbors, we don't even have a fence to our community, will get inspired by their fellow Hamas friends and will just do the 7th of October in Judea and Samaria, which is a scenario that we are all very frightened of. Here, we don't even have a border. If they decide altogether to do what was done in Gaza, this is a real threat. And Mark was very helpful because we decided to help many communities in buying security equipment. And he was very, very helpful for us. His professionality is just, he's such a professional. Yeah. And he just helped us be significant in those days for those communities. Many of the communities, because the men were recruited, were left mostly with women and kids in a very bad security situation. So we had very difficult days here. And of course, we have a piguim from time to time. When you know all
terror
the news.
Attacks.
Many, many terror attacks daily. And even the border with Jordan, which is usually one of the most quiet. Last we had a terrorists come invade the border with Jordan and come into a community in Jordan Valley, which is something that didn't happen since 1970.
It was actually, Mark told me that it was a drone that one Israel Fund had given to them that caught these guys. They're coming from Jordan, and they're coming from Iran and Iraq, and they're coming through the line with Jordan and trying to come in and bringing a whole lot of weaponry with them. So no one's resting for a minute.
Right. Absolutely. So we know that our communities are strengthened more than ever. On the optimistic side, the Jewish and Israeli spirit is stronger as ever. And what we see is that many, many, many young adults that, of course, got their whole world put upside down. The students, let's say, only started learning, lost a semester, basically. This year, all the 300,000 academic students in Israel lost a semester. So many people were recruited and came back or didn't come back. And we in Kerma lost, wounded, of course. And we all suffered many, many losses in our closed circles. So being a young adult in these times is very hard. And being together in a community with a sense of mission is a deep answer to the need. To these deep needs. And so we are now working on building more and more villages, first of all, in the Gaza envelope, hopefully to come back to the northern border communities also there, and of course in Judea and Samaria, because we feel, and Jordan Valley, because we feel this is the time, this is the moment of need that we didn't know, such a tough moment for those border communities. And on the other hand, such an understanding of how this specific mission is so important for the state of Israel, not only physically, but also, I think, spiritually. These are the communities that mark Israel's borders. It makes Israel to what it is.
Yes. In many ways, you know, people compare it to 1973 and to the Yom Kippur War because we were taken by surprise, but there are others who are comparing it more to 1948 and really to the Independence War and the establishing of the country and the borders as they were and the importance. We're feeling that here in Gush Etzion, where I live as well, because Gush Etzion is a place we lost in 48 and we didn't liberate until 1967. And there's a lot of that sense and that same fighting spirit. So where do you get your budgets from? Where do they get the funding from for your communities?
In normal days, we ask the communities, and still the communities that are not evacuated, we do ask them to be part of the budget, because we feel that when we come to a community, we ask the community to vote for the project to come. And only if we have 80% that votes for the project, we come in, because we believe it's their project. First of all, to make a change, it needs to be their change. The communities are a part of the budget, not such big in percentage, but very important, as well as the regional councils, the local ministries. More significant than that, we have the Israeli government, which is usually 50% of the budget. It's an Israeli government bureaucracy. We always know on the last day of the year how much we got for the year that passed. So it's tricky to manage. But usually it gets to around 50%, sometimes a little more. And we have philanthropic partners, friends all over the world that we gather together. It's my most precious collection of the best people, of the best Jewish people all over the world, really from Australia and the US and Canada and the UK. Really all over the world, very special friends that together are giving Kedma its ability to act.
I know you have trouble in Judea and Samaria, just like, because a lot of some people won't give to these areas.
From 2014, when we established Kedma, we built a network of 10 villages till in 5 years, till 2019. And then we started working in the Lebanon border, in the northern border. Very fast, we also got to the Gaza envelope because I got a phone call from Gadi Arkoni, the head of the regional council, which lost his leg in the Tzuk Eitan operation. And he was it was in summer 2019. Maybe you remember there were balloons and kites.
Yes. And the burning Gaza the fields. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, very horrific situation for the communities. Honest thing like a kite or a balloon became a terror threat. And when he came to us and say, I want a Kedma village in the Eshkol region, which is the southern part of the Gaza envelope, which is tougher, of course, geographically, it's further than the center of Israel. We felt it was a mission we couldn't, for me, an operation. I was thinking, let me finish the northern network and then I'll count to the Gaza envelope. But just that pushed us to get in, and I'm very happy we did. And we were there in the last five years doing a lot of work. So coming back to us, so I'm saying when we started in working inside the Green Line, of course, I'm a historian in my research, and I research history, and the Green Line has no significance. It's a Kav Shvitat HaNeshek, the
ceasefire line. Yeah.
Right. It doesn't mean anything, not strategically, not historically, not spiritually. It doesn't have any importance. But unfortunately, it became a line everyone refers to, and the Jewish philanthropy is very affected by it. I can say that the amount of support we get from the federations all over the world for our work in the Gaza envelope and the northern border is very significant. But unfortunately, in Judea and Samaria, we don't have any of those official bodies that support right. us. Yes, which is, of course, very sad. For me to see, because when we look strategically at the state of Israel, we have borders that we need to protect. What does it matter if it's on this imaginary line or on that imaginary line? But unfortunately, it's very tough for us to continue and prioritize Judea and Samaria and Jordan Valley as we did when Kedma started. For me, I feel because of how the security situation is here, and how sensitive not only the everyday life is very hard in these areas. It's also that when you look at it in a worldwide strategic look, this area is very, very important for the state of Israel. So unfortunately, I think it's not a right thing that happened, but that is reality. We get a lot less partners and philanthropic money for our work in Judea and Samaria and Jordan Valley. We try to not make it influensive on our priorities, but of course it helps. We try and build more and more villages. My vision is to get all one of those 300 national priority communities. They all deserve it. At least yes. one Kedma program in it. And in order to continue, we need to find more friends that have this vision.
Right. Well, that was an impetus for tonight's webinar, because we do have good people who are watching and who want to know how they can help. So go to the One Israel Fund website. And if you earmark it Kedma or Tirael Cohen, she will get your donation and make very, very good use of it. And then you can come visit and come see. And meet the people that are there and speak to the people there, because ultimately it really is all about the people. And I think about your PhD, you know, your doctoral work, and maybe take a few minutes and tell us about it, because it is almost eerie what you're working on and how you have a whole lot of information now that sadly you didn't have 6 months ago.
Yes. So community resilience is a pretty new term. It was brought by Daniel Aldridge, a professor that started his way in Harvard, which actually is a Jewish person that lives in New York with a black kippah on his head. I met him in Sde Boker, that's where my university is, in the Negev, in the Eastern Negev, last January. And he and his wife also came during the war to volunteer in Israel. So amazing Zionist people. But anyway, he was studying about the tsunami in Japan. He went there to Japan and he studied the communities there. And he saw that with the same objectives of how the community was big and how its economics development was, and with all the same objectives, he saw that two communities, how the tsunami hit them, of course, two similar communities had different reactions. One survived, meaning the community continued to grow, children were born, and another community didn't survive. Everyone left, it was abandoned, and he tried to understand what happened there. And he talks about a human capital. You probably all read Robert Putnam's book about the American human capital and how he measures there the way the networks, the get-together of people, how many people come when there's a get-together, and how much do they meet, can say how much the network is strong or not strong, of course.
Right.
Anyway, Aldrich took this thought of human capital and brought it to communities and tried to say something about community resilience. And he says it's all about three kind of ties. The tie inside the communities that he calls bonding, between the communities, which is called linking, and with the institutes outside of it. And it required, and he measured and saw that you can say something interesting, that sometimes a government that interfered and built a big bridge made the community feel not safe or not similar to what happened in its community, and the bridge did not help the community survive. It even make it fall apart. So it's not all intuitive. It's not all about the money. It's all about ties. It's all about the connections. And what I believe is that when you bring a young adult group to come and live and act inside a community, it makes them, first of all, map their needs, which is the first thing we do in a community. How many kids do we have in every age? How many youth members? How many older people? And then we do tutoring, one-on-one, also for the older people and also for the kids and the youth, and also get together for those three audiences. On top of that, community events. The Jewish calendar gives us many excuses to meet. And on top of that, the young people of Kedma have many, many ideas that, of course, we do with the communities. And the most we can get the communities to get together, to interact, to have good experiences together, the strongest the community will be when the disaster will come. And that's the stronger it will be to survive after it. We talked about it before the 7th of October. We would never have thought that we would suffer from 22 communities in the Gaza envelope had the terrorists invade them. Think about a community. You go into the yellow gate. Remember it when you come into those communities, there's a yellow gate, and then you feel safe. It's home. It's a safe zone. And when the terrorists invaded those areas, it's something very deep in what the community is and the ties that is ripped. And I think it will take decades. Before the 7th of October, 2023, we had, in all the time of the State of Israel, 25 communities that were invaded. And here in one day, we almost doubled the number. So, of course, it's an event that we will only understand in decades to come how we can repair it. But I believe that it's all about the ties, and the stronger we will be. And I think this webinar is a great example of how we get together. And for me, every talk about that day and about what we do is a healing experience. So I thank you all for being here, and also for the One Israel fund that has come also to visit me. I got amazing women, an amazing afternoon with them, and many, many beautiful toys that my kids really appreciated. So thank you for that thoughtful visit.
It's all about the people, and it's all about connecting the people. And the bigger Jewish community, you speak about within the little communities, And this is the bigger Jewish community and the importance of strengthening that ties. So I know this sounds almost cold and academic, but I mean, I assume that people are tracking the different communities now at some point so that others can learn the reports that are going to come out. And I know you're already working on it, which is crazy that before October 7th, that was already your thing, resilience in border communities. But I would hope that there's other people also to see. I hope that all the communities survive and everybody comes back. But it'll be interesting to see which ones do better. The bigger ones, the smaller ones, the ones that have maybe, I don't know, more faith. I don't know how that works. And in Israel, anyhow, that's a term that's all over the place. So, you know, so, but I know also from people working with trauma, with from the Nova Festival and from the soldiers that are coming out, to some degree, Israelis now are writing the books. They are, it's not like they can go back and flip through the research book and see, oh, this happened in Scandinavia, so we'll follow their protocol. Things like this have never happened before on this kind of a scale. And so I know that in addition to the, your community building, you are also in that sphere, and that that's something that's very important for you.
I've been doing measuring in the last few years in Iroz itself. Of course, I didn't understand that now I have data from before the war, and now I will collect data from after the war about the community resilience inside of Iroz. I think it will be very interesting data that we will use, and the world will learn about community resilience. I am very sure that no community will be abandoned, because the Israeli government created an administration called Tkuma. Yeah. Tkuma means reviving. Is that a good translation?
Yeah,
even?
Revival. Yes, yeah.
Revival. So,
Lekum Kadash, to get up again. Right.
Right, to get up again. And their vision as administration, they are acting for only 5 years since November 23, and they're supposed to finish their job in November 28. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And their goal is not only to come to what happened, but also to make it better, to flourish the area. They look at the Tkuma, what we call now Hevel Tkuma, instead of saying the Gaza envelope, we call it now the revival strip. Mm-hmm. And they have a program of how we are making this place flourish more than it ever was. And my hope is that this very, very big Jewish and Israeli spirit will stand now. And will, as you say, there is so many organization working. We were the only organization working in Iroz Oz. And before the war, but now there are so many, right?
Right.
So I feel lucky on that term, because we see how strong we are. And I really believe, I heard in Kiryat Gat, someone, one of the young families, a father of a young family in Iroz, so he was asked, will you come back with your two kids, two children and your wife to Iroz? And he has been through the massacre and almost died and lost many of his friends and family. And he said, would you ask a Auschwitz survivor to come back and live in Auschwitz?
Wow. That's heavy.
So, it is. And it takes your breath away, because you understand that he lost whole families in front of his eyes. He was fighting that day, and he felt, as they say in Iroz, we were abandoned by the Israeli state twice. Once, no one came. As Eve is saying, they were stuck on the way, right? All the forces were trying to get there, but it was such a terror attack, and we were so surprised and unfortunately unprepared. And it took a whole day to get there, just to get there. And unfortunately, it was very too late. And they fell abandoned. There are border communities just a month before the terror attack. I have to mention Sal Margolis. He was the Rav Shatz, the head of the chief of the security unit of Kibbutz Kisufim, also on the Gaza border, not far from Iroz. And he was a good friend of mine. And I met him in September 23. And he told me, you know, they took all my guns away. They took the guns of the communities. And he was very, very upset because he felt something in the air is coming. He lived there his whole life and he sensed something. And they felt their voice wasn't heard. The weapon, the heavy weapon, was taken away a month before. It's so stupid. Why do you put communities there, children, younger families there, and not give them the weapon that they need in order to confront such an attack, or even less of an attack, if you couldn't imagine? Mm-hmm. Anyway, Sal Margolis, as many others in Kisufim, lost their lives during the battles there. He was trying to protect their families. But I hear his words in my ears, and I understand them. They felt they were abandoned, not unfortunately, by very, very harsh circumstance. It's Hamas' fault, not the IDF's fault. Of course, we're not confused. Right. But they have been through a massacre, and the Israeli army was not there, and the system was not there. And they say, and the second time we were abandoned was, we have 37 of our community members. It's 10% of their community is still there. Children and women and older people. And it's horrific. It's just terrific. And yeah. I understand his saying on one hand, but I must say that even if he doesn't come back, other people will come back.
Yes.
And what we see happening now in the Gaza envelope is amazing, because people are coming back. They just can't help themselves for not leaving home. Mm-hmm. And the Israeli government is very encouraging people to come back. I don't think any community will be abandoned. It will maybe just start again. That's the worst it will be. But it will demand all of our faith and all of our belief. And I saw today with KEDMA staff members from all over Israel's borders. And you could see that a young mother from south of Hebron, which works there in the community of Tene Omarim, she was talking about the roads and she's terrified. And from Jordan Valley and Ma'ale Efraim and Mechora, which is a community that was invaded in 2002, and they're terrified. We're all feeling the sense of insecurity since then. And on the other hand, how much the mission is important. So,
And that's the privilege of being a part of this, to see the greatness of the people doing things that are not necessarily the best for the individual, but need to be done for the nation. And that's something that can't be put into words. And it overcomes a lot of the feelings of insecurity and anger. There's a lot of anger. How did this happen? Will we ever really know what happened? There's still a lot of questions up there. And the grief in the price that we're paying in order to defend this place. But this is home and we have no place else to go. And I personally want to say that I'm so glad that you're out there with other young people such as yourself, with that spirit and the faith, and you just need the resources to make it happen, because within all of you, there's really, it's the spirit of Israel and it's the future. And it will, you know, we will survive and we will get to a better place.
We will
definitely been a road.
We will thrive. Even better days will come.
Yeah. That's for sure, always, always. And we live in that reality. Tirel, thank you so much. I know that the last 3 months, just on a personal level with your husband out there defending the rest of us, have not been simple. And you're just one example of the women who have been really holding that down for many, many, many months. And the men who are fighting and the women who are fighting, the women who are at home, it's an extraordinary country. It really is. And it's just a shame that the world doesn't see it, but at least hopefully the people on this webinar and the people in our circles understand that and have come and volunteered, and we will rise up again stronger.
I want to say thank you for this invitation, and thank you for the One Israel Fund for being such an important voice, such an important group inside of the philanthropic world that, as you say, is usually very different. So I thank you all for all that you do for Israel and for being here today with us and for caring.
And I'm
so
looking
much.
Forward to bringing people to your villages to say, this is what you did. This is the partnership that you made with Tirael in order to not give the enemy and the evil ones the victory. we can prevent that. Okay, they can hurt us, but they're not taking us down. So thank you so much. And thanks to Shauna for being behind the scenes here for the webinar. And Tirael, I will see you soon. Thank you so much for everything. Eve Harrow, One Israel Fund. Thank you all for tuning in. You can be in touch. If you want to be partners with Tirael, go onto the website, as I said, earmark it for Kedma, and she needs every resource that she can get. And you just know by looking at her that it's all going to strengthening the communities and to strengthening the people in them. So take care, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. And goodbye for now.